We are at the Main Street Diner in Oberlin, South Main, 51 South Main, as we shine the spotlight on Oberlin. Craig Adams here along with, and I got to make sure I got all my mics turned up. Are you on that mic now, Bruce?
I'm now on this mic, yes. I'm on a guest mic, so I feel as if I'm a guest this morning here on the show as well. We are continuing our WEOL Lorraine Palace Theater spotlight on Oberlin. And somehow we always end up these spotlights with some sort of a musical guest, whether it's a marching band or a show choir. But this morning we've got the jazz professor Peter Dominguez joining us. And well, who's your friend that you brought with you this morning?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. You know, normally listen to you guys. My son played football at Avon Lake High School, so I've heard your broadcast before.
Oh, so congratulations. You know. Go Shoreman.
But this instrument, this fabulous instrument I have, is Milt Hinton's bass, and it's from 1790. It's an Italian instrument, and he purchased it in 1937, and he proceeded to play it with the Cab Calloway Orchestra all across the country. And then it toured in the 1940s, 1955, with Louis Armstrong. And so this, and then it was in the New York studios, his prolific studio bass. So you've heard this instrument, believe it or not. I mean, if you listen to Bobby Darin's Mack the Knife, this is the bass on that recording. He recorded, Milt went on to be one of the most prolific recording bassists in the history of recording. He did 1,200 recordings, studio recordings. So you've heard this, if it might have been with Barbara Streisand or a studio recording of Frank Sinatra or Lena Horne, he toured with Pearl Bailey. He did all that. So this is the famous instrument.
He lived to be about 90, right?
Yeah, he did. And believe it or not, he had a recording career of 65 years. He started recording. First record was in 1932. So
all with the upright bass.
Pretty much. Well, he did. He has an Ampeg baby bass, and we also have that. And there is some. He played the Merv Griffin show, and he played electric bass on that too. But he didn't enjoy that. But this was really, he was a double bassist.
How did Oberlin come to possess this and also have much of those photographs that we heard about earlier?
Boy, that's a nice and long story. Sometime, essentially, I met Milt through my teacher Richard Davis in 1979. I won a scholarship competition in 1981. I went on to school, got my master's, I did my doctorate at the University of Miami, and then I was up at Michigan State, and I always stayed in touch with the family. I stayed in touch with Milt and Mona. And he would send me cards, he'd be traveling, he'd send me postcards, and I'd send him letters back. We just stayed in touch throughout the years, and then when I was professor at Michigan State in 1995, I brought him in for residency for a week. And I produced a video of that, you know, him teaching, him playing, him talking, and all that. And I sent it to the executor probably a couple years later. And David Berger always remembered me. And so in 2009, when we opened our jazz building, out of the blue, David had just, he wrote me a letter, said, "Hey, you remember me? You know, we have Milt's papers, his collection, his bases, his scholarship money, and the photos." And they had certain requests coming from the Library of Congress, Smithsonian, Rutgers, for the collection when Milt passed away in 2000. They weren't happy with what they were going to do with these materials. They were pretty much, Rutgers was going to put away in a vault somewhere, and the bases were going to just sit I said, "David, why don't you come out?" About 3 years ago, I invited Holly and David out. "Why don't you come out and see our facilities? We have a jazz archivist, Jeremy Smith, now, with the Newman Collection. We have the space. And frankly, I mean, this would be a great way to carry on his legacy and share this with students and learn the instruments and learn the styles from Milt." And so that took about 3 years. And about a year ago, this bass sat in storage for 13 years, and it had about $10,000 restoration. And I've had it for just about a year now. And with this bass, we received three other instruments of his. The collection of all his artifacts. Mona Hinton saved everything. There's There's triplicates of every program, every poster, every newspaper article, everything. So that's all in the archives. And then, astonishing enough, Milt Hinton left $250,000 in scholarship money. He had his own scholarship fund. I was the first recipient of that scholarship fund in 1981. And so this amassed to this amount. So we were able to transfer that into our endowment and start the first Milt Hinton Institute for Studio Bass, which ran this past June. So we had 35 students here from 11 different states in Vancouver, and they studied with 12 different bass players of all different styles, playing jazz, classical. The most important thing was the studio, because Milt played everything. He played in orchestras in the studio, he played pop songs, he played rock songs, he played, you know, jazz, and he swung. So he did everything, you know. So that's where we were able to start the Institute. We have his collection of basses. And then on loan, Holly and David are still working the photographic collection, which is 60,000 photographs he took. And that we have in the Conn Lounge, and we have it on loan at the museum, and that's what we have here today. But Milt and Mona, we're going to dedicate the collection next week, and they are here for in perpetuity. And believe it or not, Mona's from Sandusky, so it's like a circle that's is being completed. So it's very fascinating.
I had a chance to, with the internet looking, there was a short piece of him just explaining the purpose of the bass and what the bass mat does. And I've never heard it explained so succinctly. From this point forward, I can understand and appreciate the bass more, thanks to just what he was explaining. When, you know, my job is to just kind of hold things together. I'm the bass. I'm the foundation. When there's guys soloing, I'll give him a little of what he wants. I'll stay out of his way. And then when it's my turn, I got to come up with some other thing to add to it. So he really was a teacher, in a sense.
He was always teaching, yeah. He was. Yeah. He believed that you learn twice by taking it out of your mind and then putting it into somebody else's mind, too. You know? So he was very committed to education, you know. And you see that. You
know. Where did he get his start? Do you know what got him to take that instrument and own it?
Believe it or not, there are some great stories about him. I mean, he worked as a paper boy, and he started in the South Side of Chicago on violin. And interesting enough, there's an Oberlin connection there. Professor James Johnson taught. He was a preparatory teacher here from Oberlin. He studied violin, and that was Milt's first violin teacher in the South Side of Chicago. And he's actually James Johnson. Well, there's a picture in the Conn Lounge of him. He's buried in Oberlin Cemetery here. And he married Claire Evans, who was the daughter of, I think, Maurice Evans, who was a prominent family here. And so he was part of, he had that Oberlin passion instilled in him early on. So he started on violin, and then he was delivering papers, and I believe he was working for Al Capone, so he was delivering papers. So apparently he'd be delivering papers early in the morning and see the musicians coming out in the clubs after their gig, and they're all dapper. And he says, let me see. I want to do something like that, you know. So he thought he was going to be a violinist, but then sooner or later the jazz singer came in, and so they didn't have any orchestras doing the silent film. So he said, all the violinists lost their job. And he says, well, I got to figure this out. I got to do something else. So he picked up the bass. And he had perfect pitch. He just, like, he never played anything out of tune. So he was just able to transfer it on the bass. And soon he started working with Eddie South as a teenager. Eddie South was a great Southside violinist that was prominent. So, and from that he grew and took lessons from everybody he could. He went up to Milwaukee, studied in the Chicago Symphony, Milwaukee Symphony guys. He studied with everybody, you know, as he grew, and then he got the job with Cab Calloway Orchestra, and pretty soon befriended Dizzy Gillespie, and just started growing, and just was known.
I suppose as a bass, you can also observe all the other guys doing things and pick up things from them along the way too.
Oh yeah, you're definitely behind the scenes in a lot of things, a lot of ways. You really learn by listening and picking things up, you know. But you're right. I mean, first of all, you work with the structure and time and working with pitch that way, and then you move up to melody after that. And Milt had a special coming from Vicksburg, Mississippi. He was considered a New Orleans bass player, which was a really, in the if you think of it, if you study it in 1910, 1920s, it was a really elegant position, the way that they played the bass from New Orleans, because they were in all high society, so they used the bow, they plucked, they slapped, they did everything. So Milt was considered a New Orleans bass player, even though when he was nine, he moved up to Chicago. But he had all these attributes of the great bass players of the time.
Who do you model yourself after, or what kind of a style do you play? And if you could give a little sample for us, that'd be great this morning.
Oh, I'd love to play a little bit on this instrument. My teacher was Richard Davis, who Milt was his mentor. He went to New York City, and he was, after Milt, he was one of the most prolific recorded bass players. So I grew up in a family, my father's a jazz piano player and a vocalist, but he taught vocal for 34 years. So I grew up singing in a family, and I like to play every kind of bass there was. I mean, the person that just passed away recently, Jack Bruce, he was one of my big guys. I stole everything from Jack Bruce when I first started. So I played electric bass, and I played everything. I played funk to rock and roll too. And while I was in the orchestra, bowing the bass and learning the literature. So I just like a good bass line. It doesn't matter what kind of style of music it is, you know. If it speaks to me, I'm going to seek it out and try and play it.
Is there something about a bass that's not wanting to share the spotlight? I mean, you know, there are many other, especially in orchestra, there's more of the other ones. There's not as many needed of you.
Yeah, because using an ensemble, we just need one, because we're holding the, sort of like having a football team with one offensive lineman, right? Yeah. we're holding everybody intact here, yeah. Unless you get in a symphony orchestra and then you assimilate into one sound, you know, and then you have 8 bass players or 10 bass players there. Okay. So I like to do both, either step out and play solo or play with an ensemble.
You mentioned Richard Davis, and what came to my mind was Bruce Springsteen. Am I correct?
You're right. You know, there's a funny story. I'm very close to Richard Davis. He still is one of my main mentors, and he's the one that introduced me to Milt. And I run his foundation for young bassists, too, and I've done it for 22 years. And about 3 years ago, Bruce Springsteen was coming to Madison, and he was playing the big Coliseum there, and I guess he called up Richard. And he said, "Hey, Richard, this is Bruce Springsteen." And Richard said, "Who?" he didn't remember doing it. He says, "Well, you're on my first couple albums."
Yeah.
And I said, "I am?" he was so busy recording everything.
Sure.
But yeah, he actually eventually came out and did the Coliseum show with Bruce and played it there. So Richard recorded with John Lennon and everybody. I mean, following in the footsteps of Milt. So I view myself as, going back to your question, I'm just following in those footsteps and in their shadows, you know. That's pretty much what it is. I'll play anything. I'm not only my professor of jazz bass, but I'm in the string area too. So I teach classical bass.
Okay.
I teach Latin bass. I teach, you know, any type of instruments.
Well, how much effort does it take to tune something like that? You got some giant pegs at the top of there, and it's a big, thick string.
Probably it's more important with the ear than it is with how you crank it, you know. Something. I'll play just a little ditty here. This is actually something that Milt wrote, and this was called Milt on Stilts.
Thank you. Thank you again.
Peter Dominguez, the jazz professor at Oberlin College, joining us this morning as we round out our spotlight here at the Main Street Diner. Again, celebrating Milt Hinton. It's going on through the month of, starting in November 5th, I guess, with the film and a lot of other exhibits. You can go to oberlin.edu/con, find out more about all the things that are taking place, and maybe even get a chance to see. Yes.
Can I make one more
sure.
plug? My students are going to be doing a recital on Saturday morning on the 8th at 10:30 in Kulas Auditorium, and we're going to feature all four of Milt spaces, including this one, and all different styles. We're going to have some Bach played on this. I'm going to play Stevie Wonder. We're going to just play all different kinds. We're going to do the Ampeg Baby Bass. We're going to feature a Latin style, and so you come out and see these instruments in action, and also hear the talent and that we have here at the Conservatory. So that's my plug for Saturday morning.
Well, how did you get this here, by the way? I know you had a bit of a case. You
well,
brought
the
it
billing
in.
Is right there.
So you just kind of walked it over? Everybody has a lot of
things. Yeah, with a wheel.
Yeah, walking bass, I think.
Walking bass, yeah. Right? It's a real heavy instrument, so yeah, you got to put a wheel on it.
It's well-worn, but obviously there's a lot of history in that.
Oh, you see, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of battle scars on it, but it still remains a...
I bet Milt could probably have told you what all the different nicks were from.
This bass could talk.
Well, it's yours, us sing. We appreciate your time, Peter. Thanks for bringing it in.
Oh, thank you so much, gentlemen.